Welcome into the show on this Monday evening, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm your host, Ryan Porth, joined by Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. Justin, we have a lot to get to tonight. We have some hockey to actually discuss. Alabama Huntsville,
we do, yeah.
Their hockey program has been saved. We'll be touching on that here in a few minutes. Also, the NHL return to play plan and how it pertains and impacts the Nashville Predators. We'll be diving into that as well. But we all know that there are issues going on in this country and in this city that are larger than any hockey that we'll talk about tonight. Just to bring it closer to home, you know, I don't spend a whole lot of time watching the news. I just don't, because I don't like negativity, and a lot of the news is negative. So I don't avoid it when I don't need to, like in a situation like the last few days. But, you know, in the last few days, I've spent more time watching the news than I probably had in the last month combined, because I was growing tired of all the coronavirus negativity. And, you know, saw everything on the news Friday as it was going down Friday morning in Minneapolis. The CNN reporter wrongfully getting arrested. You know, the other cities experiencing violence within protesting, like Louisville or LA. You know, we have CNN on in the studio here in DC. It's getting real outside the White House as Donald Trump is addressing the media there. But to be watching all of that as it unfolded in other cities, and then you see it unfold in our city Saturday night at the historic courthouse downtown, windows being smashed at bars on Broadway, it really does hit closer to home, because it's your community that is now being affected by everything that's going on in this nation. And at least for me, it hit closer to home Saturday night. I don't know about for you, Justin. It's tough enough to watch it in other cities. It's really tough to see it happen in your city. And it was upsetting, it was disheartening, it was maddening, and it was especially maddening knowing it could have been worse. It could have been worse if it was a normal Saturday night in downtown Nashville, especially on Broadway, and I don't even want to think about what that could have been like. You can replace broken windows. Over time, you can take graffiti down. But if that had been a normal Saturday night in downtown, it could have been a lot more violent and a lot more damaging. But just overall, this was one of the most depressing weekends of my life when it comes to news. Just totally depressing. And what's going on in our country obviously can't be settled by two people in this studio talking. It can't. It can only be settled by everyone in the nation coming together as one. And it's evident after this weekend that we are as far apart from that happening and as divided as a country and as a society as I can ever remember. And you absolutely hate to see events like this happen over the weekend that force people to come to that realization. So that's what I have to say to open up. I know you have a lot of thoughts that you want to get to as it pertains to what happened in Nashville and what happened across the nation.
It's like you said, and it's a difficult situation. I know we're here in Sports Talk, and there are so many things to drive it home and to listen to, and how the situations have affected so many different things that are just way bigger than sports. And seeing these things happen, there's so many positive and negative thoughts that I have, and what caused it all is the big thing. And to talk about is that you had a man that was killed, and rightfully so, by the police, and protests started happening, and peaceful protests, and then things got out of control. Peaceful protests all over the country, and I'm trying to think, in my life, I haven't seen protests like this happen across the country. And in a way, that makes me actually proud that there is finally a matter that made people come together from all different backgrounds that meant so much to them that they had to come together as a country. And it's not the big cities like L.A., Chicago, Detroit, New York, but you're hearing of things like Fort Wayne, Indiana, Louisville, Grand Rapids, people wanting to come together for something that they truly believe in, that they want to make a change to a systemic problem that we have in this country, a problem that does seep into sports, and especially hockey. We see it in hockey plenty, and I'll get to that. We see it in NASCAR. It's not just one little thing, but we see it in some sports way more than others, just given the background and the history of those sports. But that it shows that there's a problem. But the positive parts of things are when you see people coming together to try to voice a message that is important to them to want change to happen. People and police officers, for instance, in Flint, Michigan, where you have the chief there walking with the protesters hand in hand, walking there with them. You're seeing it all over. You're seeing positive things come out of this as well. And that's what's important to reflect on as well, is that you do see people coming together. There are sad things that are happening as a result, and you're seeing these different situations happen where it starts downgrading to where there's violence. And that is absolutely sad. And I see how it's happening as well. But I want to focus on the important part of it, is that there's people trying to make change in our country. And that's what's so important, is that you have people that are suffering right now. You have our black friends, our neighbors, our community members that are suffering right now. And it has to be you have to step in with them and ally with them to understand. People won't know it because of my name. I'm a person of color, right? Mixed race. But I've never experienced anything. I cannot put myself in a black person's shoes. I'm privileged. I have not experienced anything of this sort, because it's not about me. It's about what we can do to make it better. You bring in so many different athletes as well that are chiming in on this, and so many great leaders as well. Jonathan Toews put out a great statement as well today on his Instagram as well. You're seeing so many different things like Akeem Alou, Keandre Miller, Kevin Weeks, Evander Kane, Joel Ward, PK Subban have all dealt with so many different types of things, whether it's on the ice or off the ice, and it shows that this is such a big problem, and that's just a small segment of the problem when it comes into the sports world. A small segment, but that small segment leads to what's bigger, what we're suffering as not just a nation, but as a world, as the world, as human population. The problem that we have here, because it's not just isolated just to America. We see it happens in Canada. We see it happens everywhere. But that's the problem, is that if we can do what we can, the best that we can do to help try to make things better for our neighbors, for our fellow citizens, for the people in our community, that's what it has to come down to. And you have to look at ways to be open-minded, to think about this and open to discussion. And not enough with the what about this or what about that, or deflecting to other things. Address the matter as it stands and don't be afraid to talk about it. People out there are willing to talk about this, whether it's in sports or in the country or in the world. People are willing to talk. And if you have an open discussion, that's when we lead to positive thinking even more and lead to actual true change, to where we can move on, we can rebuild, we can heal. And that's what's important to me, to bring it back, is that if we can start in our little segment as hockey fans and start doing the little things to try to make it better for our sport that we love, and it's only going to grow from there. And that's what I want to enact people to do, is those little things, whether it's at your community rink, it's in the NHL, you see someone that's doing something inappropriate, correct them. It is up to you to be that change. It is up to you, the listener, be that change. When you see somebody's doing something wrong or inappropriate, teach them. Be the change.
Very well said, Justin. Very well said. And there may not be a better time than the now, in terms of what we're going through as a world, to have these discussions and have these open thoughts and to listen to everybody, because a lot of people in this nation and in this world have a lot more free time on their hands right now because of the world we are living in with COVID-19. And I know you're laughing, but it's so true.
It's the truth.
You know, all these protests that we saw over the weekend, whether it was here in Nashville or many cities across the nation, I just made this comment to you before we hit the airwaves, is that I don't know if all of this happens without COVID-19 affecting the world that it has in the last few months, where people are having a lot more free time at home. They can sit there on social media, see a lot more stuff on social media and say, you know what, I want to have my voice heard. I want to go to this protest in my town and have my voice heard. We're seeing athletes galore voice their opinions. And I have to think, if this were happening with the normal sports world going on, they would not, the sports athlete as a whole would not be as boisterous about this, because they would be so focused on the task at hand, Let's take hockey, for example. The Stanley Cup Final would be going on right now. The NBA Finals would be going on right now in the NBA. And yes, they would know what's going on, but they may not try to use their platform as much or as well as they have in the last few days to get messages across, like you shared with Jonathan Toews. You know, it's an opportunity right now to enact the change that needs to happen in this country and in this world.
And you think too, most players would be on their off season. They'd be on their vacations. They would be paying attention, obviously, but they wouldn't feel it's in the right step to be involved and enact things. And we see it especially with hockey. We see that the robotic responses a lot of times when it's coming to things that are not related to the game. Whereas, especially in the NBA, personality seems to be celebrated way more and having actual thoughts and opinions on things. But it's been great to see, as well as people in the community. And we're seeing that so much more of, whether it's a cleanup after something bad that happened, you see people going and being involved in the community. We can use this to heal, whether it's the sports community, whether it's the community in general. You can use things to heal, but heal needs to happen by making a change and evolving to something better. And that's what I think so many of these athletes are seeing, real good leadership come out of so many of these athletes. That's not a corporate message, but something where they're saying that I don't understand, but help me understand. I want to understand. I want to be there for you. And you're seeing so many great leaders come out, which in athletics, there should be plenty of natural leaders, right? I mean, it's a team, sure. Team games. You're just naturally a leader. And that's what's been so great, is to see people using their voice as a leader, that somebody, someone in power that has influence over others because of fans or whatnot, utilizing that for good. And yeah, there's going to be negative comments because it's always going to happen. They're dealing with it very well. And you're always going to have those people that do the but or what about things like that. But overall, you're seeing so much great come out of it with these leaders, and now let's take that next step from them. What are they going to do now after making that statement? Be more involved in the community. And you see that already. You see so many people stepping up and doing those small things. It doesn't have to be big on just one person's part. You can do little things that make things better.
Mm-hmm. Well, for generations now, nothing has divided this country more than racism, more than politics, and especially now, over the weekend, this is about as divided of a country as I have ever seen in my life. I don't know about for you, but at least speaking personally, this is as divided as I've seen this. I'm not going to pretend to know how to fix it, other than just people as whole need to come together as whole and not be so divided. They need to set aside their differences and listen. You know, if you want to listen, I would advise you go back and listen to Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver who joined Jared and the GM this afternoon. I would advise you to go listen to that interview and the passion behind Chris Sanders' message earlier this afternoon. It was phenomenal. You know, the events of the weekend initially had me wishing that there was Major League Baseball to watch, that there was a Stanley Cup Final game to watch, that there was NBA Finals to watch. To watch sports as we know it, to take our mind off something like this. But then again, maybe the fact that there aren't sports to watch and take our mind off of it from all the events over the weekend won't let us forget, as a community, as a society, as a nation, what happened over the last few days. Really, ever since Thursday or Friday, once the riots and the protests started escalating.
I think you make an absolute great point, and it's good that we're able to focus on this because it's bringing out something that there are problems that we can all focus on. And it's just one of those things that it's uncomfortable to talk about a lot of times. It truly is. I can sense it right now. But uncomfortable is good. It means we're trying to discuss something that is important when it's uncomfortable. If it was just easy to talk about, change isn't going to happen. And that's with any situation. If it's too comfortable, then you're not making a difference. You're not making changes. If it's uncomfortable and you get little goosebumps, you're going, I don't know, then you actually are making a change. And you're doing something that is out of your comfort zone. And that's how you start making a difference.
This was one of the most depressing weekends of my life. Just whenever I turned on the news, it was so sad, especially Nashville. You know, I drove around downtown Nashville yesterday evening as I was on the way to a friend's house to just visit them, and they live on Demumbrian, and drove around Music City Center and Bridgestone Arena just to see it myself, especially the graffiti. And it's just, your heart sinks knowing that our society has devolved into that here in the last handful of days. And you're seeing the Music City Center have graffiti. You're seeing the, one of the precincts have graffiti. You're seeing Bridgestone Arena have graffiti. And it was also at the same time really cool to see volunteers down there
absolutely
trying to take their graffiti down. And we saw it in Minneapolis on Friday after the overnight riots that caused lots of buildings to burn down, including, believe it was the police station there in Minneapolis burns down. People are there in the community the next morning helping clean up. You know, that those are the moments that I wish got more media publicity than the negative moments of Saturday night, where the historic courthouse here in downtown Nashville is being put into flames and bars are getting their windows smashed. And the Ryman had a couple windows that were smashed. You know, it's depressing to see all that, but it was uplifting to see people come together and try to clean up after the fact.
People come together, try to clean up, people trying to protest peacefully, people coming together for that, people of all ages and backgrounds trying to do that, and then people coming together to clean up in all these different cities as well, and knowing that they have to do it as a community. You have to do it together. You have to listen. You have to do it together, whether it's to clean up, to make a change, to incite change, to ignite whatever you can do in your own person to think, this isn't right, I need to make a difference, I need to make a change. Little things go a long way. Listen.
1,000%. You want to get into something a little bit more positive?
We can, absolutely.
Let's do that. A college hockey program was saved by the community. We'll get into that next. On Preds Insiders, he's Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So last segment, we talked about something depressing in the community. Justin, let's talk about something that was very heartwarming to see last week in specifically the hockey community, as the Friday before Memorial Day, in a classic news dump setting, the University of Alabama Huntsville comes out and says that the hockey program is no more. It's one of how many programs?
Three, including men's and women's tennis.
That they're done due to lack of funding. And we'll get to your conversations with the AD and the head coach here in a minute. But 1 week later, over $500,000 have been raised on GoFundMe. Over $750,000 total raised by people in Huntsville, people across the nation, across the world, especially the hockey community, lending a helping hand to save the UAH Chargers from going away. Now, it's only for this one season, this next hockey season, the 2021 season. But the fact that that everyone came together on GoFundMe and helped save this program, you know, and the former UAH goaltender Cam Talbot, now in the NHL, was a driving force behind making a lot of people aware of this and bringing the fundraising to everybody's attention. It was a great moment for hockey in the South. You know, there aren't a lot of prominent hockey programs in the South. This is a D1 men's hockey program. And for the community to come together and save that program, even if it's just for a year, I thought was great for hockey in the South.
They blew out of the water, the goal. So here's the setup. So the Friday before Memorial Day, so it's a long weekend and a Friday afternoon. If you're trying to hide something, that's the time to do it. And so the news broke, and obviously an uproar because apparently notable alums were not even talked to about it. The community wasn't talked to about it. It just was a decision that was made by the University of Alabama system. So University of Alabama in Huntsville means it's part of the University of Alabama system, kind of like University of Tennessee Chattanooga, you know, things like that. That's part of the big system overall. So obviously, you know where a lot of the funding goes, right? Roll Tide. That's for Robbie Stanley. but so we know where a lot of that goes. So here's the thing. The press release said, due to COVID-19 and, you know, loss of budget, bowl. It was an opportunistic time for that to happen and blame it on a virus, because last year, almost a year ago right now, seven teams in the Western Collegiate Hockey Association, the WCHA, announced they were going to leave the current one and reform the CCHA, leaving the two Alaska programs and the University of Alabama in Huntsville. Now I'll just say UAH because it's a lot easier. And UAH in the dust. So no conference again. So when they were in D1 in the early 2010s, yeah, they did not have a conference. Hard to be independent unless you're, you know, Notre Dame, even though they're not even independent. But Arizona State currently is, and they have a competitive program. So it's tough to be independent. You're in Huntsville. It's not the easiest location to get to for a lot of schools. So budget comes in, plus the virus with travel and restrictions that could come into play for schools. All those things coming in, perfect storm of opportunity to say, you know, we're just going to can it. This is a week after they announced their freshman class.
Oh.
So this was caught so many people off guard, but the discussion started a year ago when they knew they weren't going to be in a conference, and they issued a statement saying we want to be in the new CCHA, but that would mean the CCHA would have to accept them in it. So we already know the two Alaska programs are in deep trouble right now as well, because it's really tough. Usually when schools go out there, they're there for two straight weeks to play both of them in two back-to-back weekends, which is tough to be away from school that long, right?
Sure.
So all these different things. I spoke to Athletic Director Kate Smith about it. He went into even more detail in confirming that these discussions started a long time ago. It wasn't just all of a sudden, we're going to make this decision. And he came into a bad situation already there because he was interim AD. They made him the AD. And so he already came into a tough, difficult decision. Talked with head coach Mike Corbett. It got to him pretty quickly as well. And what his big thing was, I need to contact my students to make sure they don't know. They don't find out on social media, because news breaks. We all know, even, you know, D1 program in Alabama, news is going to break. It's big for college hockey for a program to go away, just like Long Island University adding a program. So all these talks happening, they lost two students to transfer. Then we hear Monday of this past week that what seemed like an insurmountable goal was set. Yeah, raise $500,000 in 5 business days, and then we have a powerful alumni that'll be able to match part of that, and you can save it for a year. Does that not seem a little interesting for the University of Alabama system to say, yeah, raise $500,000 in 5 days? That's the goal that they were given, and everyone's kind of, you're probably thinking, $500,000 on a GoFundMe in 5 days? There's no way. And I'm sure that's what they were thinking. And then the hockey community overall, internationally, came together and blew that out of the water through t-shirt sales and GoFundMe. Big names like Cam Talbot, obviously, John Buchagras, ESPN, Patrick Kane, Dylan Strome, Hina Stroza. You have plenty of NHLers tweeting about this and pushing the word out. And you're just seeing the number tick up and then really blown out of the water. I talked to Jared Ross, who was a former captain at UAH, and he was the first player from the state of Alabama, born in Alabama, to make it to the NHL.
Roll Tide.
So Jared Ross played for the Flyers. He actually scored a goal in the playoffs for the Flyers. So he's the first player from Alabama to do that. It's pretty cool. So big time support from him as well. And he's still involved in the hockey community as well. So it's just great to see the succession of all this from the roller coaster of emotions as a fan there. But now the big thing is, and I know I'm rolling, is now what?
You're rolling Tide.
I'm rolling Tide right now. It's now what? You have the save for a season. Now you really need to see, how do you make this sustainable for 5 years, 10 years, the rest of the years that this program is going to be around? You have to make it sustainable. You cannot keep having this happen once every 8 or 9 years, or even after this year, another year. Find a way to make it sustainable. Have to find a way to do that. And then also make the local media care. We got to find a way to do that. We cover UAH up here plenty of times in Nashville because it's a big hockey market now. It's an hour and a half, hour 45 south. You can easily go down
there for
games.
They love their hockey down there.
They love it. The Havoc in UAH is big.
My older brother lives down there, and he's probably listening to this right now. So hello, Eric. And I've been down there a couple times, once for a Huntsville Havoc game. And at the Huntsville Havoc game, there were over a dozen Preds jerseys in the arena. And it's not that big of an arena, but it was pretty well full on a Saturday afternoon for minor league hockey.
Right.
And that that really opened my eyes to what kind of a hockey following there was in Huntsville, Alabama. And then you drive around town and you'll see houses in Huntsville that have Preds flags
oh, yeah.
flying out in front. I mean, it is, for it being a smaller city, it has a rabid hockey fan base within that small city.
And youth hockey as well. They develop youth hockey big time down there. And that's what's important. UAH is a huge part of that, being a university in the community, huge into youth hockey. So the loss of that would have been tremendous from not having a college program there, to have a little kid watching saying, I want to play college hockey someday. That dream would have been gone.
Sure.
Now it still exists. The whole thing that last year came out too, that there was plans to put an actual arena on campus that would house UAH hockey and other sports as well. Being on campus would be huge for them because it makes it easier for students to get there. The Von Braun Center it's a drive from campus, and it's huge comparatively. A college hockey stadium doesn't need to seat more than 2,000. That seats 7,800. So imagine if you're at full capacity, how empty an arena looks, mm-hmm. even with 2,000 and 8,000 seat arena. It's not good for pictures. It's not good for experience or anything like
atmosphere,
that.
Atmosphere, all that.
And college hockey is all about atmosphere, too. You need that. They have the pep band is the world's longest cheer, where they spell out the University of Alabama in Huntsville letter by letter during games. Some people hate it. Some people love it. But that's a thing they do. It's their thing. So it's a fun, fun environment. I highly encourage, when we're able to go down there and experience it, because they need your support. It's college hockey. You're also seeing players from other teams that might make it to the NHL as well. So you're seeing a double whammy of win by supporting a college hockey program and seeing future prospects for the NHL.
Good stuff. During this upcoming break, I encourage you to spell out University of Alabama Huntsville, and I guarantee you we'll be back, and we'll be talking about the NHL return to play plan and how it impacts the Nashville Predators. That's all coming up next on Preds Insiders. He's Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders live on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth alongside Justin Bradford on this Monday evening. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Carrie Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. I actually had Geno's East pizza earlier today. They brought Geno's East pizza to the station.
Oh, dude.
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
As they would say on Twitter, V good.
V good.
V good.
Wow, good to see that Mr. Porth has joined 2016.
You know what, Justin?
I'm not wrong.
I've got two words for you, and it's not V good. So the NHL last week comes out with the return to play plan. And the NHL season has been on pause since early to mid-March, and really, sports have been on pause as a whole since then. And it was really good to see the National Hockey League come out and be the first of the three major sports in limbo. We all know the NFL has been powering through just about anything on their league schedule. It's happening. But between the NHL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball, the NHL was the first to come out and put their stake in the ground and say, this is our plan.
Talk about us.
Yes. And they did for much of the next day, especially on Go Look and Wingo on ESPN Radio, which was great to hear. And I thought that was one of the positives of the NHL coming out in the fashion that they did, with Gary Bettman having an organized plan of what the league was thinking for their format to return. And the format to return is a 24-team setup. Not necessarily a 24-team playoff.
Right.
It's going to feel like the playoffs whenever it does start, if it is able to start. And there are a lot of other hoops that the league needs to jump through, and the PA, to make this happen. Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet tweeted out last week that it's now sounding like, according to the players, that July 10th is now the earliest that training camps will start. So if the NHL does resume its season, it's likely going to be in August, which August hockey is better than no hockey.
That's gonna be really weird.
Very weird. It's gonna be 120 degrees outside and there's gonna be hockey being played. But the Preds in that format, a 6 seed going up against the 11 seed in the West, the Arizona Coyotes, first blemish for you, Justin, at what that means for the Preds, a best-of-five play-in series in the qualifying round for the right to then officially join the Stanley Cup playoffs. But it's going to feel like the playoffs when the Preds win, or if the Preds play the Coyotes.
Is that Andrei Kostitsyn's music?
No, it's Alexander Radulov's.
Oh!
Doesn't, what's the song by Green Day? Jesus of Suburbia? Doesn't that sound like Alexander Radulov?
Oh, man.
Alexander Radulov.
No, so the first thoughts that come to my mind just about this potential matchup is danger. And the reason why is that Arizona is another one of those teams similar to the Predators. I feel like they should be better than where they were at in the standings given the talent on that roster. And they have a good mix. And we've all seen what's a good team made of is a good mix of veterans, good young talent on ELCs, and solid goaltending. They have that potential, all that kind of in the mix, just like the Predators could have, aside from the contract part, really, in terms of ELCs. But it's dangerous to me. I think this is one of those series really early on, because we have no idea what's going to happen after training camp and whatnot, to go five, just because of the matchups. And it's always talk about matchups. How do these teams match up with each other? I think any other team in the qualifying round the Predators could have matched up with, aside from maybe the Canucks on the power play, that this is a dangerous matchup. For the Nashville Predators. Just looking at the roster overall for the Coyotes, they should be better. And they were underperforming. I know they've had injuries to deal with. The Predators have had injuries to deal with as well. So it's going to be very curious to see how training camp goes, because all these teams are on equal footing in a different way, because now injuries have been able to heal, whereas you might not have had them be able to heal.
Well, think of the St. Louis Blues.
Right.
I mean, Vladimir Tarasenko.
Right.
We didn't know what kind of shape he was going to be in when the playoffs started for them.
Right.
He may not have been full speed until the second or third round if the Blues had made it that far. But now he's 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, now you have other players, and this is the other thing too. The positive for the Predators, if there's any team that I'm thinking this is hopefully me not being a homer, if there's any team that this could potentially be a great thing for, it is the Nashville Predators because of a full mental reset, because of how they perform overall during the season. They were picking it up going in. They're starting to pick it up in the right direction, right?
Well, UC Saros had back-to-back shutouts in the game before Montreal, and the Montreal game was the last game that they played.
Right. Boy, Montreal would have been, you know, the other game would have been Weber's 1,000th, right?
I know.
But full mental reset for Pecorine as well, who could really benefit to have that break. The only downside is having that break without being on the ice and only having off-ice training for a lot of these guys. But mentally, I think it could help these Nashville Predators, because they knew there were some mental funk problems going on as a team throughout with inconsistency. And if they can figure that out, this team still does have what it takes to make some sort of deep run. Not saying to be the Stanley Cup champion, but at least to make it competitive and to make it to the conference finals if they get it together and in sync. The potential's there.
On paper, there's no reason why this team on paper can't compete with anybody else in the Western Conference when it comes to a playoff setting like this, where there's no home ice advantage. That's typically a great advantage for the Nashville Predators, but it certainly wasn't last postseason, or really the postseason prior, especially against Winnipeg. But all things being equal, no travel, no home ice advantage. It's man versus man, talent versus talent. I would put the Preds up against almost any team in the Western Conference, almost any team. And like you said, the fact that they are getting a full factory reset, it's not just a reset, it is a factory reset.
They put the little pencil in that little hole and press the little button.
Yeah, if the Preds were an Xbox 360, at one point they had the red rings of death.
Oh, brings back memories. Trigger warning, please.
Man, I had the red rings of death way too many times.
Oh, man.
It once took me like 8 months to get my Xbox 360 back from the factory.
I worked at the UPS store, and it would be the factory thing where they could send it out.
Yeah.
Like, you have to type in the whole, you know, what's the reason why? And you could just see the look of despair on the face of Red Ring of Death.
But bringing it back to the Nashville Predators, like, you mentioned Pecorine. You can throw Ryan Johansson's name in there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm going to throw Victor Arvidsson's name
absolutely
in there.
Absolutely as well.
Because Victor Arvidsson, and you brought up the fact that Pecorine and Ryan Johansson can't skate right now. Well, they can skate in Sweden. I can't confirm whether or not Victor Arvidsson has been skating, but Victor Arvidsson was a shell of himself for 95% of the regular season that was played before the pause. He didn't have the burst. He didn't have the production, and it kind of felt like at times the size was catching up to him. Robert Bortuzzo cross-checks him in the back. He was never the same after that, and it felt like maybe in the couple weeks before the pause, he was starting to get his legs back a little bit. But I feel like a player of Victor Arvidsson's stature, both in terms of what he can mean on the ice and how tall he is and how diminutive that he is. Is that, did I say that word correctly? I don't know. But Victor Arvidsson is someone that I think could totally benefit from this reset and come out just flying out of the gates when this qualifying round starts.
Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind that he was dealing with something. Just coming back from injury and everything. And obviously every player is dealing with something. It's just that's the way the sport naturally is. But Victor Arvidsson, in his style of play, you could tell was just very different. So, but that's the thing too, is other players and other teams are going to have that positive thing as well. So this isn't, all things being equal, you're starting off, just throwing it right off, you're in a tournament. At the very beginning of the season, you're healthy. Whatnot. Another team, Seth Jones. I mean, he was out for the season, right?
The entire Blue Jackets roster.
The Blue Jackets roster was out.
The Blue Jackets roster had half its roster sitting on IR
right
on March 12th, or at least it felt like.
And now, for the most part, I think, they'll be back and have an opportunity.
I mean, they should be.
Yeah, have an opportunity. So it's going to be interesting because, and that's where the whole, when Matt Duchene brought up the COVID Cup thing and the asterisks, is that now these teams are back to equal. It's not that whole you push through the season and these are the survivors of the season kind of thing. You made it through all the injuries and everything like that. You're back to equal. So I understand that argument about this thing as well because, yeah, it's almost too equal on the ice because now you didn't have the way that the puck falls, the puck luck of whether it's injury or whatnot is not going to be there at the beginning because everyone's starting off overly equal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other side, the devil's advocate side of this as well, where you might have some people thinking, well, it just still doesn't count.
Well, I also wonder what this roster will do with essentially a training camp with John Hines' system.
That's another valid point.
They never got that before he stepped behind the bench. He essentially flew in to Nashville and stepped behind the bench for the Boston game in which they got just pummeled.
Literally.
And they, you know, it's always tough for a coach to come in and catch a moving train. I get it. Some coaches do it a lot more flawlessly than John Hines did. Because, I mean, there were some games in there where you're like, I don't know about this team. But there are some other moments where you're thinking, okay, well, he's finding something within these lines or within this system. But the fact that the Preds could benefit from a full training camp of 3 weeks of actually learning the system and putting it into motion, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, the roster as a whole is getting a factory reset from Xbox. And you're also getting a head coach being able to implement his system. I mean, that has to be a pretty good recipe for having success, right?
I know we're
throwing darts with the qualifying round and with the playoffs as a whole.
So bad at darts.
It was me versus you, then I feel pretty confident.
So another player to throw it out there because he was lighting it up and who could benefit even more is Mikael Granlund. I knew you were going to have that reaction. Don't give me that.
I haven't heard that name said like that in a long time, so yes.
But really, who was flourishing little by little in the new system where he's more freewheeling was Mikael Granlund. That's a positive thing right there because he's playing for contract from whoever it is.
And he was, like you said, he was starting to really hit a stride with John Hines. And I think if he were to come, if they come back and let's say they win the qualifying round and they get out of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and Mikael
Granlund
has a big impact on that series, then I have to think you feel better about that trade. Because as it stands right now, seeing what Kevin Fiala has done in Minnesota this season and what Mikael
Granlund
did up until the John Hines era, you have to, you're sitting there thinking, well, on deadline day, you thought it was a total steal for David Poile that he got Mikael
Granlund
from Minnesota in exchange for Kevin Fiala straight up. And then it turned out to be the complete opposite of not feeling so good about it when Kevin Fiala is just lighting it up. But
Fiala was even a healthy scratch. So, I mean, he started off a little rough and all of a sudden flew.
Oh, yeah. In October, I believe I had either Adam Vingan or Robbie Stanley in studio with me, and we were kind of poking fun at Fiala of like, well, this is why the Predators traded him for
Mikael Granlund.
All right. Coming up next, UC Saros or Pecorine. If game one against the Coyotes was tomorrow night, who would we start if we were Justin or we were Ryan Porth? That's all coming up next. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. I messed up the timing there. I was going to say Alexander Radulov because Jesus of Suburbia by Green Day, the opening line, totally sounds like Alexander Radulov. Elijah, behind the glass, before we get out of here for the night, I want to give you the task of finding the song with the words.
Oh, I have the lyrics pulled up.
Okay, well, we'll give you a few seconds here, and we'll debate Saros versus Rene, and then we will listen to the lyrics, and you tell me, Justin, that it does not sound like Alexander Radulov.
All right.
That it does not sound like a song that defected to Russia back in the summer of 2008.
Y'all, Porth didn't blink for like 30 straight seconds there, and I was really concerned.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, I got it. It's ready.
You got it, Elijah?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's hear it. That sounds...
Totally!
It's Alexander Radulov! Yeah, it is totally. 100% Alexander Radulov.
Yeah.
In hashtag misheard lyrics.
Of all things. Alexander Radulov.
Alexander Radulov, I'm the son of rage and love. So, close.
Yeah.
If you say it fast enough, it does kind of sound like it.
I'm the son of rage... What is it?
I'm the son of rage and love.
I'm the son of rage and love. Alexander Radulov. I mean, close enough.
Hold me closer, Tony Danza.
Wow. I watched Rocket Man recently for the first time.
Yeah. You watched a movie.
You know what? I'm a sucker for
the
music movies. Like Rocket Man and Bohemian Rhapsody and Walk the Line. Love all those movies. Anyway, we're done with Green Day. We're done with movies. UC Saros versus Pecorine. Game one. If it was Preds versus Coyotes tomorrow night in Vegas or Vancouver or Edmonton or whatever hub city that the NHL puts them in. If it was Preds Coyotes tomorrow night, which goalie are you starting in game one, Saros or Rene?
Can't answer that yet.
Why?
No training camp.
So you have to see training camp before answering that question.
Absolutely. You have to see training camp and they get two exhibition games
as
well.
But that's not the question.
I know that's not the question.
If it started tomorrow night, in this hypothetical,
then everybody's going to get injured.
Well, fair point. But this hypothetical.
Okay.
No training camp, no exhibition games.
Okay. Okay. Let me put it this way. If we're throwing everything out, if we throw out the pause,
okay,
we throw out the whole pause there and given how things are performing and just say that we're on a few days break, like it was a bye week from the last games that were played to the start of the play-in rounds, and I would start use of Saros.
Under that scenario, it's pretty easy, but you make it sound a lot easier.
Because it's a loaded question.
There's a big difference between a few days and a few months.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say we need a training camp for. It's a loaded question.
Okay.
Well, okay, since you asked a question, you obviously have an answer in your head, right?
It's the same answer, but I think it's a lot closer than people think.
Oh, yeah, it's always going to be a lot closer, I think.
Because you mentioned Pecorine. You brought it up that Pecorine is probably one of the players on this roster that would best benefit from this factory reset, right? Well, if you get even a glimmer of what Pecorine had been before really the turn of the calendar from October to November last fall, and the Pecorine of the seasons prior, I mean... That is hard to sit in game one. He has been your number one goaltender for a decade since he took over as the starting goaltender. No other goaltender has started a playoff game. It would be, if in training camp and if in those exhibition games you see the old Pecorine, it would be hard to sit him.
Agreed.
But, I mean, really from the All-Star break up until the NHL season pause for those 6 weeks, UC Saros was John Hines' starter. Mm-hmm. I don't think we really talked about it all that much because it was just kind of like the elephant in the room within that Saros versus, not versus, but Saros-Rene conversation.
Twitter talked about it.
Sure. But it's not like it was the debate around town of, or the talk around town, you know, of UC Saros has overtaken Pecorine as the number one starter.
I believe it was asked a few times in press conferences. I remember Adam Vingan asking it before, just about the process and everything as well. And just not skirting the question, but we're making a decision on a game-by-game basis.
Sure. But it wasn't anything like when Ryan Tannehill took over for Marcus Mariota on the football field. That was like the passing of the guard from one quarterback to the next, and it was the talk of the town. And I kind of think the fact that Pecorine has been such a legend in this franchise's history, probably the number one icon in this franchise's history, that a lot of fans took a long time to accept that Pecorine's game was slipping to the point where UC Saros did take over as the starter. And Mike Kelly of I am blanking on the website. The point
You just go on. Monday. Oh man, it's Monday.
I'm having a case of the Mondays. Do you know the website?
Well, now I can't think of it now that you're putting me on the spot too.
Well, okay. Mike Kelly is really good with fancy stats in the National Hockey League. And he had a great great story last week about UC Saros and the fact that of all the goaltenders in the National Hockey League, he had an incredibly high... Now I'm distracted.
You had it right. The point hockey.
The point hockey.
You were already correct.
I thought it was like Point Break or the
Point
whatever.
Break. Okay, four.
That'd be a tennis website. So the point hockey. I don't even know where I'm trying to take this. This has gone completely
off
the rails.
We've lost him.
But the point, and it's also like 130 degrees in this studio right now. It's almost unbearable, and I'm wearing jeans, and I'm regretting that decision right now. He has one of the highest percentages of shots on goal hit him in the chest.
Yeah.
And it's a super impressive stat because you look at the other goaltenders in that discussion, they're like 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", and
right.
He's like 4'2".
Little exaggeration there.
A little bit.
Slight.
But point proven.
Point hockey.
Wow.
So I'll throw this in as well because I need to make sure I make this point because Porth is gone. Is that this training camp too will be interesting because all these AHL players, because the AHL season's canceled, so you're going to have plenty of black aces. They're going to be able to take part in this training camp too. There's possibility that one or two of these guys could bump a current NHLer out just based on the training camp alone, because you got to go with what's going to work best, right? And not even that, if injuries take place during training camp or the two exhibition games before the play-in round begins, there's opportunities there because there are plenty of guys that are doing very well because Milwaukee, they're at the top.
Mm-hmm.
They're cream of the crop of the AHL this season, and their season just done. And they had so much opportunity, so much just left on the table for them to accomplish. So they had plenty of players that are stepping up. They see this as an opportunity to come into a training camp in the middle of the season, basically, and come in and make an huge opportunity happen for them.
Well, I do wonder by the time they come back, it's going to be close to 5 months between games.
Right.
I wonder what kind of effect that will have on the older players. And the Preds are one of the oldest teams mm-hmm. in the National Hockey League, and the Coyotes are one of the youngest teams
right.
in the National Hockey League. So you wonder about that. You wonder about injuries right off the hop in training camp. Coaches are going to have to be really smart about how they bring the players back. So, anyway, we're done for the hour. Mike Kelly is the point hockey, and Green Day's song "Jesus of Suburbia," the first line sounds like Alexander Radulov. That is what we have settled.
Live show
in this segment. Nothing like it. Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio, really appreciate you coming in studio.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you having me.
For Justin Bradford, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks for listening to Preds Insiders this evening on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, it is Slap Shot Radio. Keep it locked right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game.